Hello and welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychologies Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy, or UKCP for short. I'm Susie Walker and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychologies. Each month on Talking Therapies, we will be talking to a UKCP therapist about a range of topics. If you find yourself feeling low and anxious after long exposure to bad news and social media, then stay tuned for an expert's insight.
I think if you combine, as I say, our natural tendency to focus on problems, to try and work them out, to imagine them with all of the problems that we're shown, both through the media and social media, then it's a real problem for human beings. Mm. We're constantly switched on high alert, effectively.
That was UKCP psychotherapist John Paul Davis. John Paul is a keen writer, contributing to blogs and articles. Recently, John Paul published his book, Finding a Balanced Connection, a self-help book that seeks to help people build their well-being from within. Shortly, John Paul will be talking to Sarah Niblock, CEO of the UK Council for Psychotherapy, to find out why we get so easily distracted by bad news and social media. But first, here are some comments about the effects of negative media and social media from people we spoke to on the street.
I do find myself getting really distracted by social media and the news, because there's always news and there's always social media. I think especially the news distracts me more than social media does, because I've learnt which of the social media channels don't feel good and which ones I actually appreciate. So, yeah, and the news like comes up on my phone whenever I open my browser, and it's actually sometimes really unwelcome.
The news are all over us, social media, it's everyday thing, you know, whatever we get up, we just check the Facebook and let's go on to Instagram and what everyone else is doing. So yes, I wish I cut down my time on social media, and I'm definitely working on it.
I have a time I look through social media, and if it's past that time, I'm done with it. So, and sometimes I'll just be sucked into the rabbit hole and just get distracted. But most times, I'm very disciplined when it comes to, and I have specific things that I attend to it.
Oh, I really do think we see more bad than good news. Because, I mean, all the journalists I ever hear talking about it say that's what gets clicks.
If you follow the rabbit trail, you're going to see more bad news. And yeah, in general, media is more because of the clickbait, and either on traditional media or digital media, it's all about the clickbait. And they say good news don't sell, bad news sells.
Whenever I listen to a radio, I think I find more bad news than good news. So I think that is the truth. That is probably one of the things why I stopped watching the news regularly. It's maybe just on when it's on, I watch it. But in general, it's all bad. There isn't anything positive that the media is saying, really.
More than half of Americans experience stress, anxiety, fatigue, and sleep loss as a result of the news, according to research conducted by the American Psychological Association. The news isn't just the only one affecting our mental health. Evidence on how social media is impacting our mental health is increasing. Research carried out by the Mental Health Foundation and YouGov in 2019 found out that 1 in 5 adults in the UK felt worried about their body image because of social media images. With social media and the news affecting all aspects of our lives, how can we limit their effect on our psychological well-being?
Media today, news media, is absolutely ubiquitous. You know, we've got 24/7 rolling news, we've got social media feeds popping up all the time on our computers and mobiles. There's a danger it can kind of take over all of our thinking and take over our consciousness every day. We are, in a way, naturally drawn to the stories that are kind of shocking and bad. Is that natural for us to get into those patterns?
Yeah, I think absolutely it is. I mean, as you say, ubiquitous in 2020, 500 years ago, we would only have seen the things that were going wrong, I guess, next door or down the road. But now we have the opportunity to hear about every single problem potentially all over the world. If you combine that with our brain's natural tendency to look for problems, always bearing in mind that principle that we are programmed to survive rather than to be happy, I think if you combine, as I say, our natural tendency to focus on problems, to try and work them out, to imagine them, with all of the problems that we're shown, both through the media and social media, then it's a real problem for human beings. Mm. We're constantly switched on high alert, effectively. And there's also the thing, of course, that we can only be in one place at a time. The place where human beings are happy, generally, is in that place of connection with self and others, love of self and others, friendship, feeling part of the wider community. And the place of frightening news stories or even comparisons on social media, things that are outrageous, that is the place of disconnection, I think. You know, it's the place of fear and anger, which aren't where human beings feel good. So I think it could have a profound impact on our well-being.
I mean, speaking as a journalist, certainly, you know, within newsrooms, it's often the stories that have a kind of negative component to them do tend to contain the most news values and do tend to be most newsworthy. But it's interesting to hear you say there is something in us. Are we naturally drawn to those kinds of things?
Yes, absolutely. I think because of the survival thing, the reason that we've survived is because we focus on problems and try and solve problems and try and avoid problems. Mm. So we now not only have our own problems within our families or friendships or work, we have access to everybody else's too. Mm. And then if you look at something like Twitter, the things that will tend to go viral, I've noticed being on it recently, will be things that are about outrage or a comment on somebody else's behaviour or what they've said, which has angered people. I'm not sitting here in any way saying what people ought to be angry about or not, or what they should choose to campaign for or not. It's just that I think it's really important that we are aware of our brain's natural bias, so that if we develop a negative story about the world, that, for example, a catastrophe is happening or the world's becoming more and more unsafe, which you can see we would develop if we look at the news regularly, we then have a confirmation bias for that, which means we only select information that fits with that belief.
Yeah.
And we let pass all the good stuff.
It's true, actually. I mean, in news, and particularly online news, it's fair to say that editors will scrutinise the data and see what stories, if it's on a website, they'll check which stories are getting the traffic. So the more you're drawn to bad news stories or tragedies, the more those stories will be repeated further down the line. They'll go for those and they'll package those up specifically for that audience. I mean, I did some research that basically showed it's either events, and most of those are particularly catastrophic or unpleasant, mm-hmm. or it's conflict. That's the other thing that seems to get reported a lot. I mean, have you sort of studied the kind of trends and how news has evolved? Because obviously news has changed. We don't have those local newspapers telling us the good stuff anymore.
Yes, absolutely. I suppose I have the idea in my mind about the negativity bias and confirmation bias. So I will look at the news now through that lens, really. And I can see it is constant. There are occasionally good news stories, I suppose, marriages, that kind of thing, which bring people together, but it often isn't long until there's a problem identified. People are looking for cracks in the love story or whatever it might be. So I think that's absolutely...
I think the other thing I've sort of noticed is that because news is now 24/7 and most journalists are breaking stories as they happen on social media, it means you're only getting a partial version of the story, aren't you? Which so you're kind of hungry to know, well, what's happening now? Oh, someone's gone missing, have they been found half an hour later? There's this constant urge, isn't there, to be updated?
Yes.
Whereas perhaps I suppose that we used to get the finished article and would read the resolution, if there was one.
Yes.
And the explanation and the analysis, we don't get that so much now. Maybe it's just this has happened and
as you say, that's not the thing that draws people's attention. What draws people's attention is the things that frighten them, is the story of somebody going missing or something terrible happening. As you say, they may resolve, I mean, I see on Facebook there's various things popping up all the time about this child has gone missing or and it just gives everybody a general perception, I think, that the world is becoming less safe and that people are becoming more aggressive. I think if you probably compared these times to times hundreds of years ago, we're probably safer now than we ever were. But what I would see mostly in the therapy room is probably anxiety. You know, it's, and anxiety is about not feeling safe in relationship with self, but also more generally in the environment. And I can see why that's the case with bad news and also social media. I mean, with social media, the reason why I guess we would say we go on it often is the good things, which would be seeing what our friends are doing, the more connection things that do make us happy. Creativity, expressing ourselves creatively, sharing photographs with friends, seeing their photographs. But again, if you look at social media with a problem focus, and that's intrusive and automatic, I think. It's not something we consciously do. We don't think, well, I'm happy, I'll pick up Instagram and I'm going to depress my mood. It's just we're happy, we'll pick it up. But then that flaw-based, problem-focused part of us, I think we'll look at a lot of those images in a way that compares us to them. So, and again, we'll be looking for flaws, the ways in which we're less than, not out as much as somebody else, don't look the way other people do, don't have as much money as other people, aren't as successful as other people, you know, all those kind of things. So I can really see how that... which is what a lot of people say, is that their mood will dip when they're looking at social media. You know, a lot of therapists talk about, because they see the adverse effects of social media, but of course there are wonderful things that come with it too. The idea behind it all is it's getting in touch with people we would have lost touch with otherwise.
It's meant to be about relationship, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's meant to be forging positive relationships.
Exactly.
But if your relationship with yourself, I guess, is being in some way prejudiced through that, then that's...
Yeah.
I mean, what kinds of ways, I mean, as a psychotherapist, what sort of reactions are you seeing in the consulting room to this? How do people cope with these feelings and perhaps new emotions they've not encountered before?
That are provoked by social media or bad news, do you mean? Yes, I mean, I think a lot of people will bring into the therapy room concerns about the wider world. One thing that's very important to remember, though, I think, is whilst we are looking out at the world and what may be going wrong and how we can help, we're not looking inwards. So I think that's a really key thing. We can only do one at a time, really. Mm-hmm. And what I would try and encourage clients to do as much as they can is to spend as much time as they can, I think, reflecting inwards. Otherwise, if we're too outward focused, too outward in, you might look at it that way, we'll know a huge amount about other people's responses and what they may do in a situation, including people in our own family, but have no answer to the question of what we want. Who are we? Or who am I? What are my emotional needs and wants? Am I getting my needs and wants met in relationship? Am I achieving things that I'm proud of? What are my plans for the year? So it does come into the therapy room, absolutely, and it's understandable because we see these terrible stories, and I suppose trying to encourage people to move their attention to themselves.
No, I hear what you're saying, because I mean, I know I get very, very angered when I see certain images or certain stories, and I have this real sense of, you know, anger at injustice in the world, say. But sometimes, I sort of think, well, could that just be a projection? I'm actually using that as a distraction, perhaps from what's really angry inside me. That's about me or my life, and I wonder whether people turn to news or other forms of social media as a way of distracting themselves and channeling those emotions, as you say, externally, when perhaps we need to look a little closer to home as to why we feel that way in the first place.
Absolutely, yes. And there's also an element there of being able to change the things that we can control. You know, and a number of those things are outside of our control, completely outside of our control. And if we spend a lot of time preoccupying about those things, therefore things which we have no control over, actually it does leave us less safe psychologically, I think, which increases people's anxiety, which pushes them out again to hypervigilance to the environment. And it can be a bit of a vicious circle.
Gosh, what kind of things should we look out for in ourselves then, if we're sort of thinking, well, maybe I do spend a bit too much time looking at certain mainstream news websites and I'm getting very, and I need to comment under it, and, you know, are the things that we should look out for in ourselves?
I think it's really important to know what it feels like when we're disconnected, and that usually involves when we're frightened about something or when we're angry about it. So to know what our body feels like, so that would be connection internally, to know that we've been triggered by something. Is this something that in this moment is going to be helpful for me to do? As I say, I don't in any way believe that somebody should only care about those things that they see and the people that are around them. I think caring about the wider environment, that we're part of an interconnected body of humanity, is a sign absolutely of psychological well-being and health.
I just wondered if there are any particular healthy behaviours that you would advocate for those of us who may be feeling disturbed or upset by something we've seen in the news or on social media.
Yes, I think there is, again, consciousness around the fact that everything that we put in our ears and eyes affects our bodies effectively, and therefore what we think. So I think sort of inventory of the type of media that we're consuming, how often we consume it. You know, we can look at social media for 10 minutes and then put it down and then reflect internally for 5 minutes, close our eyes and then think, how's my body now? Am I in an alert state? Am I calm? Am I feeling good? So I think it's balance is the important thing there. There are wonderful things that come from the media and from social media, but I think it's really important to know that we've got a choice over it, because that part doesn't give us choice. It will step forward and say, you must do something about this. Now, it's a matter of life or death, or it's a matter of somebody else's life or death, psychologically mostly. But so it may be that switching off more often is important, but certainly making sure that we are balancing the amount of time that we spend on that media with an awareness of what keeps us in a sort of calm and alive state for most of our day. That place of connection with self and others. We talk a lot about calm now because people are very anxious, but there's also that alive state as well. So a combination of calm and alive. What are the things behaviourally, via the body, in terms of relationship, who do we love to spend time around? You know, a list of those things, creativity, the kind of thoughts we have in our head that help us to calm us down and help us to feel alive. Being very conscious of those and noticing what's happening and then bringing them forward if we realise we're in too much of a stress state for too long a period. But most of us aren't really conscious that that's the case. I will see a lot of people that for many years have been in a highly stressed state, highly anxious, and perhaps at times as well things switch off and there's a tendency to depression. We know what we know internally. That's our norm.
Yeah, we just don't realise it in ourselves because we've been in that state of mind for so long.
Absolutely.
And I suppose in a way, by just carving out that 50 minutes to an hour to sit with a psychotherapist ensures we create that space to have that inner conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, you can either say to yourself, I'm going to carve out 10 minutes and instead of looking at a particular social media channel, I'm going to think about these questions. But actually having somebody sitting with you and creating that space, that undisturbed, very safe and non-judgmental space, is probably a really healthy and sensible thing to do to start to get to know your own state.
Absolutely. And it's about human relationship as well, isn't it? It's that sort of eye-to-eye contact. I mean, that's not the way all therapy takes place nowadays, but often it is face-to-face therapy. Whereas social media, there's very little, well, there's none potentially, but eye-to-eye contact with other human beings. So it is that helps us to feel good, you know, is soothing. There is the thing about therapy, which I have noticed from my own therapy, is that I would tend to go in and talk about problems, which again, you know, it's important to be able to do that, to resolve problems in relationship with another person, to trust somebody enough that relationship can help soothe me. That was a very healing experience. That was, for a while, what I needed. I also think it's important to be focusing on how we're building our sort of joy circuitry. So there's the problem focus. We'll naturally do that. That will naturally dominate. We either, as I say, have choice over that, be conscious about it, have choice, and also be thinking about where are we getting joy from in life.
Yes.
And I think it's a kind of positive psychology thing, which I found very interesting, that bad memories or bad things that happen are fast-tracked to unconscious memory during early experience. All the good stuff or the neutral stuff just passes by because of our survival focus. So we really have to consciously work on building our joy, whichever way you put it, but love, joy, circuitry in our brain. Gratitude practice can be a very underestimated way of helping ourselves to feel better and balance out the sort of bad news media as well. The social media side of things tends to provoke comparisons, I think, and lack of, as I say. So a gratitude practice, rather than sort of fills the gaps, it's saying, what are those things around me that I feel good about, or within me, or, you know, physically, particularly as well, because social media can, I think, really perpetuate a disconnection between with the body as well, because it's a lot about images and what people look like. So anything that encourages gratitude for all the processes going on in the body that keep even breathing, I think is incredibly helpful too. Mm. Sometimes if I say to somebody who's had a tendency to depression about gratitude, they might use it as a way to criticise themselves and say, oh, I know I should be more grateful or whatever. But anything that grounds the good and what's present and what's here and what is of worth and value, either within us physically or our skills, qualities, or the world around us or the people around us, is hugely calming. And it does, you know, keeps us in that calm and alive state.
That was UKCP psychotherapist John Paul Davis speaking to Sarah Niblock, the CEO of UKCP. If, after listening to that, you feel you could benefit from some talking time with a psychotherapist, then go to the Find a Therapist section of the UKCP website and have a look through. The website address is www.psychotherapy.org.uk and look for a Find a Therapist tab. We'll also be discussing 24 Hours News and social media cycle and its effect on your mental health in Psychology's magazine this month. Or you can find us online at www.psychologies.co.uk. We'll be doing a podcast each month for the next year with some of the UKCP psychotherapists, so remember to like and subscribe to our channel to hear it first, and it helps others to find us too. So join us again next month. Till then, thank you so much for listening, and take good care of yourselves. Thank you.